Chapter 5. The Escape Route. I am now waiting for a person who might have something to do with the crime. He might not be the murderer, but he is involved. He is probably innocent of the worst portion of the crimes committed. I hope that I am right in this presumption, because my theory depends on it. I am waiting for this man here in this room. He might not come, but he probably will. If he does come, we will need to keep him here. Here are two guns. We will use them if we need to. I took one of the guns, not really knowing what I was doing or believing what I heard. Dupin went on. I have already spoken of his manner at such times. Though he was talking to me, he spoke as if he were talking to someone far away. Though his voice was not loud, his intonation was such. His eyes, revealing nothing, stared at the wall. It was fully proven by the evidence that the voices heard by the party on the stairs were not those of the women themselves. So we know that the old lady did not kill her daughter and then kill herself. Also, Madame L'Espanaye could not have been strong enough to stuff her daughter's corpse up the chimney as it was found. Further, the wounds upon her own body show that she was abused by someone else. Murder, then, has been committed by some third party. The voices of this third party were those heard by the people on the stairs. Now I shall examine the testimony regarding the voices. Particularly, I will examine what was peculiar about the testimony. Did you observe anything peculiar about it? I remarked that, while everyone agreed that the gruff voice was that of a Frenchman, no one could agree on who spoke with the shrill voice. That was the evidence itself, said Dupin. But it was not the peculiarity of the evidence. You have observed nothing distinctive, yet there was something to be observed. The witnesses did agree about the gruff voice. Everyone agreed he was French. But in regard to the shrill voice, they all agreed that the speaker was a foreigner. But they disagreed on where he was from. Among the witnesses, there was an Italian, an Englishman, a Spaniard, a Dutchman, and two Frenchmen. Each was sure that it was not the voice of one of his own countrymen. Each has a theory as to where he was from, but not one theorized that the speaker spoke a language that he was familiar with. The first Frenchman thought the voice was that of a Spaniard, though he did not speak Spanish. The Dutchman said he was French, but admitted he did not understand French. The Englishman thought he was German, though he did not understand German. The Spaniard was sure it was an Englishman, though he had no knowledge of English. The Italian believed it to be the voice of a Russian, though he has never spoken with a native of Russia. The second Frenchman was positive that the voice was that of an Italian. He too admits to not speaking the language. Now, how strange a voice it must have been that none of the witnesses could recognize it. There was an Italian, an Englishman, a Spaniard, a Dutchman, and two Frenchmen. None of them recognized it. Perhaps the speaker was Asian, or perhaps he was African. These explanations are possible, but not likely, and I will explain why. The voice was described by one witness as harsh rather than shrill. Two others described it as quick and uneven. No one heard sounds that resembled words. Let us now consider the evidence found in the room. What is the first thing we should look for? The escape route of the murderers is the next puzzling thing about this crime. Assuming neither of us believes in ghosts, how did the murderers escape? The L'Espanayes were not killed by ghosts. The murderers had physical bodies, and they escaped physically. But how? Fortunately, there is only one way to think about this, and that method must lead us to the answer. Let us examine, one by one, the possible means of escape. We know that when the witnesses were coming up the stairs, the murderers were in the room or the one next to it. So their escape had to have been made from one of these two rooms. The police have examined the rooms inch by inch. There were no trapdoors or secret ways of escape. But not trusting to their eyes, I examined with my own. I found no trapdoors either. Both doors leading from the rooms into the hall were securely locked. The keys were on the inside. Let us turn to the chimneys. These were of ordinary width for 8 or 10 feet above the hearths, but at the top they were not wide enough for a cat to pass through. It would be impossible for a person to escape through the chimney. Now we must look at the windows. No one could have escaped through the front windows without being noticed by the crowd on the street. The murderers must have gone out then through those of the back room. Now, based on the investigation by the police, this too seems impossible. But we cannot reject it just because it seems impossible. Our task now is to prove it is not impossible. There are two windows in the bedroom. One of them is clear of furniture and is completely visible. The lower portion of the other is hidden from view by the head of the bed frame. The former was found securely fastened from within. No one was able to raise it. A nail had been driven through the frame to hold it shut. The other window had a similar nail. The police had tried to open it as well and failed. They were thus satisfied that no one could have escaped through the window. And, therefore, it was thought that withdrawing the nails to open the windows would be a waste of time. I was more particular in my investigation. I knew that anything that seemed impossible had to be proved to be impossible before it was disregarded. I continued with the assumption that the murderers did escape from one of these windows. This being so, they could not have then locked them from the inside, but they were found to be locked. And this is why the police stopped considering this possibility. But they failed to consider another possibility, that the locks could lock themselves. There was no escape from this conclusion. I stepped to the window that was not blocked by furniture. I removed the nail with some difficulty. Then I tried to open the window. I could not, as I expected. I knew then that there must be a hidden spring. I looked carefully and found it. I pressed it and was able to open the window. So it was not the nail that locked the window, it was the spring. Upon closing the window, it would automatically lock again. Still, there was the nail that needed to be explained. I replaced the nail and looked at it carefully. A person getting out through this window might have closed it again, and the spring would have caught. But the nail could not have been replaced. The murderers must have escaped through the other window. It was probable that the other window had the same spring. There must be a difference between the nails. Getting up on the bed frame, I looked carefully at the second window frame. Passing my hand down along the window frame, I easily found and pressed the spring. It was, as I had supposed, the same as the other. I now looked at the nail. It was the same as the other, and apparently fitted in the same manner, driven in nearly up to the head. You might think I was puzzled, but due to the nature of my method, I was not. I knew I was still on the right track. I had traced the secret to its ultimate result, and that result was the nail. It appeared to be the same as the other, but it couldn't be. There must be something wrong with the nail, I thought. I touched it, and part of the nail came off in my fingers. The rest of it was still in the hole where it had been broken off. The break was an old one. I could tell because the edges were rusty. I now carefully replaced this portion in the indentation it had been taken from. It looked exactly as it had before. The break was invisible. Pressing the spring, I gently opened the window a few inches. The broken part of the nail went up with it, remaining firm in its bed. I closed the window, and it looked perfect again. One part of the mystery was now solved. The murderer had escaped through the window which was above the bed. After he left, he could have closed the window behind him, or it could have closed by itself. Either way, the spring would have caused it to lock again.